is MMA Torch editor Jamie Penick, and this is the Daily Audio Update for Sunday, October 19th, 2008. I'm joined today by Torch columnist Jason Bent and senior Torch columnist Sean Ennis for a review of UFC 89, Bisping vs. Leben, from last night on Spike TV. Guys, it was a good card. Glad to have you both here for a review. Just want to get your overall thoughts on the free show on Spike. Jason, we'll start with you.
To me, it was the best card ever for Spike, a free show. I mean, it definitely was, light years beyond any of the fight nights as far as just an overall quality. The name value was there, the star power, especially when you figure with Spike, with the whole The Ultimate Fighter franchise, you've got Chris Leben, the fan favorite from season one. You've got Michael Bisping, the winner. I mean, it's just finally bringing to fruition, you know, what this show has meant to Spike as well as the UFC. And I think top to bottom, it was stocked with some solid names, good fights for the hardcore fans, and enough to draw in the casual, tough, you know, viewer, along with the casual fan that may have been passing through. If this would have been a pay-per-view card, I'd say it's a C. It's free. You can't complain. You got to give it an A-plus for that. We didn't pay for it, and it was just much better than anything they could have given to us in the past.
Agreed. Sean?
Yeah, I agree. It was a solid card overall. You know, it wasn't I didn't see a bad fight on the card. And, while it may have been light on ramifications, it was high on action. So that's always a good thing for a free card for sure.
Definitely. We start the day out with one of the UK's own, Paul Kelly, against, as they continue to dub, one of the UK's adopted sons in Marcus Davis. And first round, a little bit slow going in this fight. They started to pick it up near the end of it, but it took a while to really get going in this. The second round, they were just much speedier, much quicker to the action. And Kelly got a little overzealous with shooting in and trying to take Davis down there and left his head open there for Davis to lock in a really tight guillotine and pick up a nice submission. I thought it was a decent fight, but with it not getting into that higher gear until really right near the end of that fight, I had about a two-star minus fight for me. Sean, what were your thoughts on this fight?
I actually gave it a 2+. I thought it was a pretty decent fight. You know, it just kind of started the theme of not being able to solve your opponent's reach, which we would see later in the night as well. Kelly, looked pretty green against Marcus Davis, who just kind of picked him apart from the outside. Kelly couldn't get in close, and when he did, when he tried to get in close, he'd pay for it. Davis was just by far the superior fighter in this here. And I thought Davis also, the guillotine was really impressive because Kelly didn't even realize that he was being set up for it until Davis real quick grabbed that guard and made him tap. It's good, very, very nice fight by Davis. I think Kelly has got some potential, but he was just outclassed here.
Jason, what do you think of this opening bout?
I give the fight 2 stars. It is one I was looking forward to seeing. I love Marcus Davis. I did not really know too much about Paul Kelly, other than just bits and pieces I've seen in the past, his previous fight. This was exuberance meets experience in that second round. Paul Kelly finally shot in, got the takedown, and he simply fell to a much more experienced, seasoned professional and the very skilled Marcus Davis. Sean said, he didn't even realize he was in the choke. Paul Kelly is just green. He's raw. A few years from now, if you'd match these guys up again, keeping Marcus Davis at where he is at this fight with where Paul Kelly can be, it would be a different fight. I think Paul Kelly met just too seasoned of a foe in Davis. And he was very tentative in the first round. He finally shot in the second, and he paid for it. And I think how he learns from this defeat will tell, what's going to happen to him in the future. Sky's the limit for him. Very, very, very green fighter.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was just going to say, this is it's a really good learning experience for Paul Kelly, because he came in this, 8-0, hadn't lost yet, and just runs into Marcus Davis, who has definitely been through many situations in the MMA world and has seen many different styles and fights and has just a lot more experience under his belt, and he kind of taught him a lesson in this fight. And after that, he asked the UFC and Dana White in particular to send him to Ireland for that January UFC 93. And as long as he's ready to go, I think he'd be a great addition for another possibly free on Spike TV event if they decide to go that way. Next up, we had what was given the Fight of the Night honors, and both these fighters got their bonuses for it. It was definitely right there with the main event for me as Fight of the Night, Paul Taylor and Chris Lytle here. Just an absolute three-round war between these guys, and a lot of damage done in the clinch, a lot of body shots in there, a lot of kicks, a lot of strikes, a lot of exchanges. And, you know, this was a fight that really could have gone either way. I know, Sean, you scored this differently than I did. I actually had Lytle winning all three rounds, edging it out. I think you had Taylor with at least two out of the three, if not all three. But for me, I thought Lytle did more in the clinch. He picked up a couple of takedowns in this fight. I just thought he did overall more damage and connected on more shots with what I saw. And I thought the judges had it, saw it the way that I did. But again, you saw it differently, and many other people probably saw it for Taylor in this fight. And it was just that good of a fight that it could have gone to either man. You want to go with your side on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw it, you know, and I haven't rewatched it yet, unfortunately, but I just thought that Taylor landed the better shots. I thought, you know, neither guy was really hurt badly, but you know, that speaks more to their chins being solid than you know, the type of damage they were taking. But I thought Taylor was able to land more clean shots. You know, despite being taken down a couple times, he got right back up, and I thought that he was just able to enforce, you know, to just land better shots. And Lytle also looked a little bit gassed out in the second round. Now he came out, you know, a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for, a little more energized in the third round. You know, never really gassed out for the long haul, but it looked to me, especially with the late flurry at the end of the third round, that Taylor would have taken it. But, you know, again, it was a close fight. You know, that's why they say to finish them before they go to the judge. Now, I had an issue with how they were calling the fight. You know, the whole time you've got Goldberg and Rogan talking about how these two are going for Fight of the Night. They're going for Fight of the Night, going for Fight of the Night. And, you know, of course, they're doing their best Don Fry and Akiyama impression here, but the problem to me was the way that they were insinuating it was that you can't get Fight of the Night if you go to the ground. You know, Chris Lytle is obviously the better ground fighter, but the fact that he was trying to get that Fight of the Night bonus made him not want to go down and submit Paul Taylor. So, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a double-edged sword when you start talking that way. Do you undercut the ground game? Do you acknowledge that people want to see stand-up more than grappling? I don't know. It's kind of. But I didn't really like how they presented that. Now, it didn't really take away from my enjoyment of the fight because it was a fun fight to watch. But I do wonder what would have happened had Lytle kind of forced the issue on the ground a little bit more.
Yeah, that's definitely more of a casual fan take with an exciting fight, because we've seen numerous exciting fights that have been ground action. You just have to go back to Demian Maia and Jason McDonald at UFC 87. That was just a clinic on the ground that was highly exciting to watch. But, you know, for a lot of people that aren't well-versed in any of the aspects of it, they like to see two guys stand up and exchange, and I guess with the free TV aspect of it, maybe they wanted to clue in on that. I can't say, but, you know, for Taylor, it seems to be his MO with UFC right now. He's always in an exciting fight, but he usually doesn't come out with a victory. But despite other guys with his record in the UFC, I think he's got a career in there despite the amount of losses, because let's face it, Dana White likes exciting fighters, and Paul Taylor is an exciting fighter. Jason, anything else to add on this fight?
I had Taylor winning the fight. In fact, I even rewatched it and scored it a draw, but I did not have Lytle winning it. Something was definitely missing as far as the groundwork of Lytle. They definitely were, you know, it was a stand-up fight. They definitely were focusing on that, and it was a fun fight to watch, just like Sean said. My only problem with the scoring is it seems like the takedowns were given more credit than Taylor's shots, and that's not necessarily a knock on Taylor's shot, but Lytle's chin made it seem like those shots weren't that amazing, but he was spinning his head around, especially at the end of the third round, and a lesser fighter would have dropped like a ton of bricks. As far as the, you know, fans that maybe would have just tuned into this or the casuals, they love to see two guys stand on a dime and duke it out, but something was missing for me. I like all aspects of MMA, and while the stand-up brawls are fun to watch, I find myself craving something more. As far as Taylor goes, Taylor and Lytle, it kind of reminded me of Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti in boxing, two guys that are just going to stand there and beat the hell out of each other. Records be damned. There are two guys who can pile up more losses than wins and still find a way to be on the main card because of their crowd-pleasing nature. Both guys I'd love to see in the future. Lytle, we definitely will. And Taylor, we definitely will, too. The guy's never been in a bad fight that I've seen. And, you know, it's just a fun thing to watch, but I was wanting something more. I was craving the groundwork that didn't happen, and it did seem like they were gearing towards, you know, making it a stand-up war only just to ensure the fight of the night, rather than fighting to win, because I think Lytle could have handled him much easier and took it to the ground and finished it off.
Well, and then they teased a bit in the post-fight, possibly having Marcus Davis take on Chris Lytle. And if they set that up for that UFC 93 card, I think that'd be a highly entertaining fight, and we'd probably see more of the ground aspect in that situation, because both guys obviously have better ground games than they let on at times because they like to stand. And that brings us to fight three. Soka Ju taking on Louise Kane. This was, we've talked about it as being kind of a theme of the night of guys using their reach and picking spots. And Kane had another really good game plan in here. Predicted in before the fight that it wouldn't make it to the third round, and he was correct on that. He withstood Soka Ju's early onslaught where, Soka Ju looked highly powerful and came off like he could have taken him out in the first round, but, you know, Kane has a good chin. Kane withstood it, and Soka Ju gassed himself and just could not recover in that second round, and Kane took his spots and, you know, picked the right spot and knocked Soka Ju down and just kept on him to stop the fight at 4:15 of the second round. So good TKO victory for Kane. And this really just went to show Kane's a real deal. Soka Ju, not so much with his 1-2 start in the UFC. Jason, what were you thinking on this fight?
Well, my personal feeling is Soka Ju is another one of those guys that was a world beater in Pride, and you put him in the octagon, they become a different fighter. His leg kicks were very powerful. I mean, the guy's built like a fire hydrant, I mean, compared to the taller Louise Kane, but he was plodding, and Joe even noted it seemed like he was kind of fighting for oxygen there a little bit. I think power-wise, had he flipped the switch, he could have taken Kane out. I'd like to think that, but at this point, I don't know. Kane dropped him like a ton of bricks, jumped on him, and the shots weren't connecting so much, but they were just raining down punches and bunches, and it was an excellent stoppage. Great victory for Kane. Looks good, and the jury's still out on Soka Ju. I'm not that impressed. I think he's a completely different fighter now than what he was in Pride.
Sean?
Yeah, I was more impressed with Kane than I was underwhelmed with Soka Ju. I thought that, I thought it was absolutely right that Soka Ju gassed out. Kane came in there with the perfect game plan. You know, he stood in front of Soka Ju, let him hit him. He trusted his chin, and my gosh, that dude can take a freaking punch. I mean, he was taking shots from Soka Ju. Shots to the gut and shots to the legs from those kicks were huge kicks. And you know, he just stood there and took it all and kept coming at him. And, you know, that's got to be frustrating for a guy that relies on his power. You know, Sokoju doesn't know how to react to a guy that's going to take his best shot and not even flinch. I mean, the guy didn't even look like it was getting hurting him at all. You know, I mean, that's got to get to your head. So I'm more impressed with Kane than I was, than I was down on Sokoju for this. I mean, Kane is a beast. You know, Sokoju is a guy that knocked out. I mean, let's not forget, regardless of style or what have you, he knocked out Arona and Nogueira with no problem. And he hit Kane with some nice shots, and Kane didn't budge. So you know, that's really impressive for Kane, as far as I'm concerned. I still want to see Sokoju come back. I think he might be better suited, and I mentioned this in the coverage, as a heavyweight. You know, if he can put on some more muscle or some more weight somehow, and just be just go in as heavyweight like Alistair Overeem has done, or just to make himself a little bit leaner as a light heavyweight, because it's like Joe Rogan mentioned, these really muscle bound guys, with few exceptions like Brock Lesnar being one of them. These really muscle bound guys, they need the oxygen to get to those muscles to keep their energy, and he just gassed out really quickly when he's throwing those power shots. So, you know, I don't know. He's also, you know, Sokoju's also a nice judo player, and we didn't really get a feel out of that either. I thought we might see a little bit of that, but I think he got so frustrated from his striking not really having any effect that it kind of threw him off his game a little bit.
Well,
go to Kane for that.
Yeah, and it'd be on that point of Sokoju moving up, it'd be a much smaller pond for him in there in that heavyweight division. And because even with this victory and how good Kane has looked, he's still got two or three fights in front of him before he's going to get a title shot, because that light heavyweight division is so stacked that he's still got to take on a few guys before he's going to get into that next in line spot. So we'll see who he gets matched up with next, and we'll see what Sokoju decides to do if he tries to continue and start back over in the light heavyweight division, or if he does move up, because if he can pack on some pounds, I mean, he's got that muscle mass and that size where he could hold his own with many of those heavyweights. And that brings us to another light heavyweight bout on this card, Keith Jardine against Brandon Vera. Sean, we talked about this with Matt Pelkey on the preview show on Friday night, how, you know, one of two fighters could have shown up for either of them. And, you know, I was disappointed in Brandon Vera in this fight, because I honestly believe that with that front kick that kind of buckled Jardine's knee in the first round, that he was really taken out of it for the second and third round. And with Vera losing that first round, he had plenty of chances in the second and third round to really go in for the kill and try to do some damage when Jardine wasn't as mobile as he would have been otherwise. And I thought Vera just fought too tentative of a fight. The third round was a good back and forth round. Vera won the second round. I thought they were even going into the third, and Jardine just did enough to get the victory. I thought this was another one that could have gone either way. I actually had it scored with Vera having enough in the third round to give him the victory, and Jardine ended up taking it by a split decision. So, you know, one of the judges had it with me, and it, you know, I didn't disagree with the decision at all, because Vera didn't do enough to convincingly win. And we talked about it earlier. You can't let it get to the judges' scorecard and rely on them for a victory, because they can see many different things in the fight that you don't realize are going to cost you the fight. And I thought Vera he didn't go in for enough aggressiveness, and he didn't go in for the kill at all in this fight. Sean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, because I did score the fight for Jardine. However, I said, you know, at the time that I wouldn't argue the outcome either way, because it's just a very tough fight to call. And, you know, it was a little bit disappointing after that first round, that really exciting first round where they both got dropped, and then Jardine ended up getting Vera up against the fence and pounding him a little bit at the very end of the round, that it wasn't, you know, they didn't quite catch that fire again after that first round. But at the same time, you know, Jardine is a tough guy to figure out as far as style-wise and as far as movement and all that kind of stuff. And I think Vera, I think you're right, though, if he had gone in for the kill a little bit, maybe he throws Jardine off a little bit. Maybe he messes up his footwork. You know, I mean, he had already messed up his knee, obviously. But Jardine also wasn't showing that. I don't think as quite as much as he could have been. Now, he didn't throw as many leg kicks, and maybe Vera could have picked up on a little bit better than he did. But at the same time, you know, Jardine is a dangerous guy. If you get caught by one or two shots, maybe that knockdown in the first round maybe made him a little bit tentative. I don't know. But you know, Vera is a guy that they keep touting his potential, but he hasn't shown up for a big fight yet.
It was still a good fight. It's just they had that really exciting first round, as you pointed out, and they just kind of fizzled out in the second and third round a bit, and the intensity wasn't there that they had in the first round. Jason, did you see that as well? What were your thoughts on this fight?
I scored it 29-28 for Jardine, and it's frustrating. Keith Jardine, in my eyes, is the C student who can study his ass off and pull an A, and Brandon Vera is the guy who can get A's, but he's content with not studying and skating by with a high C or a B. He was too laid back. He seems like he's content to circle and go the distance, and he just does not flip the switch. He fought not to lose rather than to win, and this was a fight that he should have went for the kill and went for it. Now, at the same token, Jardine was effective when he let his hands go, but he was way too hesitant, and that could be as a result of the knee, which he was not showing. Vera's had opportunity after opportunity, and, you know, with the fight against Reese Andy, it was the new weight, you know, trying to get comfortable. This time, he's running out of opportunities, and he's coming up with even more excuses, and it's frustrating because this is a guy who could walk into any gym and, based on skills alone, be one of the top guys, if not the top guy. But I'm just not seeing the complete effort and that high motor in him that you get out of a guy like Jardine. And it's kind of like if you could take the skills of Brandon Vera and the heart of a guy like a Chris Lytle, you've got one hell of a fighter, but I'm just not seeing that fire. I'm not seeing the fire. I'm seeing an athlete who has gotten by based on his natural abilities, and he has not been inspired yet to push himself much further. If he does, we've got a top fighter at light heavyweight. If not, we've got a guy who is just loads of potential that is never going to be you know, brought to its fullest. It's not going to be there, and it's just mind-boggling. This was a fight that was his to win, and Jardine just did a little bit more. So in my mind, it was 29-28, Jardine, and I agree with the decision.
And you're very right, and you know, I talked about this on the preview audio on Friday, that I was hoping that Vera would show up a lot more motivated for this fight after his performance against Reese Andy. That was just, I mean, he struggled to make weight and was dehydrated and such a lackluster decision victory. And he's now dropped, I mean, three out of his last four, and all of the fights have been disappointing for him. I mean, the terrible performance against Tim Sylvia, the first round loss to Fabricio Werdum, the win against Reese Andy where he didn't show up, and this loss here, it seems like you said, I mean, he's got all the talent and it looks like he's got the tools there. It just, the effort and the heart just don't seem to be there with him. And that brings us to the main event. Michael Bisping taking on Chris Lieben. The crowd going absolutely nuts for this fight and for Michael Bisping. Chris Lieben was here to fight. Chris Lieben came in the best shape of his life and his career. And you know what? He could not find an answer for the reach of Michael Bisping in this fight. He constantly pressed the action despite taking a ton of punishment. His face was a mess at the end of this fight. But the story of the fight was Lieben pushing the action, landing some combos, and Bisping using his reach to land effective jabs and punches and counters, and you know, he was getting out of the way of any real damage through all three rounds, and I had him taking it 30-27. He won all three rounds with a just really, really intelligent game plan, fought the fight his way, didn't let Leben dictate it, but you know what? I'm convinced that if Bisping didn't have a 5-inch reach advantage, that Chris would have been able to get in there with a lot more, and he would have connected on a lot more. And Bisping took full advantage of that, and that's going to definitely help him as he continues his climb up the 185 ranks. And you know what? Bisping is a really good fighter and a really smart fighter. I wouldn't put him as an elite fighter, but you know what? He did everything he needed to do to win this fight. And win it in an exciting fashion. I mean, it wasn't a boring fight by any means, and Leben did everything he could to try to stay in it and try to do something, but he just wasn't able to come up with an answer for that. Jason, how did you like this fight?
Complete shutout by Bisping, 30-27, but this was the most fun one-sided fight to watch because deep down, as the fight progressed, you knew Leben had no chance because he was not going to get close enough to get the leverage to land the big shot, but it was just a compelling fight. He would not go backwards at all, and, you know, in fact, the final seconds, he was just sticking his chin out, you know, daring Bisping to fire off some more shots. You know, with a reach like Bisping's, you got to eat a couple to try and land one, but Bisping was able to back off, keep it a safe distance, and really just pick him apart, which, you know, Leben's face looked like hamburger when it was done. But Chris has one hell of a chin. Bisping keeps getting better, and while he's got a long way to go, I really do feel from what I see and his willingness to work and get better, I think he could be the best of the Ultimate Fighter winners that we've had, because I just think I've seen such a progression that I haven't seen necessarily from Rashad or Forrest. Bisping has changed. The Bisping who fought Matt Hamill was not the Bisping who came in against Chris Leben. This is a different fighter. I think he's being pushed harder in training camp, and I think we have not seen him get anywhere near his potential. I think Leben is still a top-tier guy, but he's at the very low end of that top tier, and Bisping is definitely working his way to the top. I cannot wait for Bisping to take on Henderson or Franklin. That will be the litmus test for him, but he passed with flying colors. And, you know, Leben has nothing to be ashamed of because, you know, at this point, nobody else at that level is going to beat Bisping either. I think Leben gave a great showing. He'll be back. He's a fan favorite, but I can't wait to see Bisping, Henderson, Franklin in the future.
Sean, your thoughts on our main event?
Yeah, I agree. This was a very good fight, and this is one of those rare fights where both guys came in with a really good game plan. You know, Bisping came in with the plan of keeping his distance, sticking and moving, getting out of the way, and taking the decision. And Leben came in there with the game plan of I'm going to try and get inside and break him, and he couldn't break him. You know, that was just Bisping's game plan and his skill winning out. And you know, I was looking around on a few sites this morning, and there were some people criticizing the fact that that Bisping actually said, you know, I went in there to try and stick and move and get the decision. But I don't think you can criticize that. I mean, he knew he wasn't going to knock out Chris Leben. One guy has knocked out Chris Leben, and that's Anderson Silva. You know, and Bisping knows he's not Anderson Silva when it comes to striking. And he knows that Bisping's got good wrestling, or that Leben's got good wrestling. So what do? You keep your distance. You've got the reach advantage. So you use it. You know, you pick your shots and you take them. And he did some damage to Leben. He may not have actually hurt him, but, you know, as far as coming close to knocking him out, but he did enough to take the win, and that's what you do when you're a fighter. You know, you don't stand in the pocket and wait to get knocked out because that's what Leben was looking for. So, you know, I thought it was just a really good game plan on the part of Bisping, but, you know, Leben also had a good plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, I'm going to get your final thoughts on this and what you're looking forward to UFC 90 next Saturday. Sean, we'll start with you.
I thought that was, again, a really good show and, you know, nothing really to complain about. I do kind of wish that they had shown the Shane Carwin fight. I'm kind of surprised they didn't because that's a guy that they should really be looking to build up. You know, it was just like, as predicted, you know, a minute and a half in and he just decimated Neil Wayne. You know, Carwin's going to be a guy that I wouldn't be surprised to see him as a top ten heavyweight very soon once he faces some better opposition. And as far as you know, the rest of the fights, again, not a bad fight on the card. I am looking forward to seeing Anderson Silva. I don't think he'll have any problems at all with Patrick Cote, but at the same time, you know, he's always a fun fighter to watch. And you know, that's there's not much more you can ask for than having a dominant champion like that. I'm pretty excited to see that. And yeah, that's about it for me.
Jason, your final thoughts on this card, and what are you looking towards next weekend?
No complaints on this card at all. I firmly agree they should have found a way to shoehorn the Shane Carwin fight at the end of the broadcast, you know, as a go-home bout, because this is a guy who is an absolute beast. The heavyweight division is decidedly weak. He is going to be a player in that division very soon. And I think they should have taken the opportunity to expose him on, you know, a much larger stage like they could have. As for next week, I have no way that Patrick Cote can pull this one out, but I do feel he's going to take Anderson Silva to the second round. I do not see Silva walking him down in one round. I think it'll take about a little bit into the second round, and I think he'll finish him off, but it should be a fun fight to watch, and I'm just ecstatic that we've only got 1 week in between, and we're right back at it with another show, and before you know it, Couture Lesnar is going to be here. This is an exciting next couple of weeks for MMA and for the UFC in particular, and I've got no complaints about the show we just watched. I look ahead with great excitement for what we've got coming up this week, and even more excitement for what we have down the line. What's in our hand right now is great, and what's up ahead is, you know, conceivably much better, but this is a great time to be an MMA fan. Right now is just an amazing time for this sport and the UFC in general.
UFC is just really... go ahead, Sean.
Oh, sorry. I was also going to mention that there was a couple other fights on that UFC 90 card. The Alves-Koscheck fight, I'm disappointed that it's not Sanchez, but at the same time, I think Alves-Koscheck is going to be a good fight. The Tyson Griffin-Sean Sherk fight has gotten, like, no play, but that's going to be a great fight. And the Clemente Maynard fight is kind of intriguing as well. I think that's a no lose card, that one. You know, between Alves Koscheck, Griffin Shirk, and of course Silva Cote, I think that's going to be a pretty good card.
Oh yeah, the UFC is really, they're hitting their stride. I mean, they've 06 was a really good year for them. 07 was a bit up and down. I mean, the unexpected Rampage knockout of Chuck Liddell kind of set things off a bit for the year, and then the departure of Randy Couture in October of last year, you know, it just, they kind of had a shaky 07, but 08's been just nothing but good for the UFC, and it looks to continue well into 09 right now. And yeah, I'm with you guys. Cote is not, he's going to put up a fight, he's going to make it a bit of a fight. He might be able to take it into the second round, but Silva is far and away better than Patrick Cote. Alves versus Koscheck, I'm hoping Alves comes in at the correct weight this time. Sanchez would have been a much more exciting fight, and I'm not a Josh Koscheck fan. I've made no it's no secret on that, but I can admit that he's gotten much better as a fighter, and he should make it a good fight against Alves. Sean, you're absolutely right. Griffin Shirk should be a treat to watch on that undercard. And then we're only a few weeks away from Randy Couture and Brock Lesnar. So nothing to complain about right now as an MMA fan. And just a lot of exciting stuff coming up. So, guys, thank you once again for joining me on the Daily Audio Update. We'll talk to you next weekend with a preview and a post-show on UFC 90.
All right.
Take care. Thanks.